situation in Iran. This from the BBC. French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius has urged Iran to seize the opportunity of reaching a deal on its nuclear program. So now that we've had the French urge the Iranians to reach a deal that they had never had any intent of reaching, I feel much better. They've been urged, and by none less than the French. Yeah, problem solved. Speaking of stupidity, the Abominator said that he would not release Russia from sanctions, and that would continue to enforce the sanctions until Russia did more to enforce the ceasefire. I mean, does Obama think everyone that he's talking to is a complete ignoramus? You know, the ceasefire that exists in the Ukraine was conceived by, brokered by, and supported by the Russians. It wasn't conceived by the Americans. It wasn't written by the Americans. It wasn't presented by the Americans. It wasn't negotiated by the Americans. It hasn't been supported by the Americans. To the degree that there is a ceasefire in place, to the degree that there was a vote in the Ukrainian parliament to afford Luhansk and Donetsk with independence, is a wholly Russian initiative. Now, Russia can no more enforce it than a man in the moon. The only way that Russians could enforce the ceasefire that they authored between these two parties would be for them to engage militarily. Yeah, the Russians are very capable of shutting the Kiev regime down, and they're very capable of holding the ethnic Russians at bay. So what the Abominator is neglecting to tell his audience, that ceasefire is a Russian initiative. Not an American initiative, not a Ukrainian initiative, it's a Russian initiative. And that the only way that they could enforce it is to engage militarily and to shut the Ukrainians down. So, all you can ask is this man that stupid? Or does he think that everybody he's talking to is that stupid? That poorly informed. Speaking of the Ukraine, an average of 13 people have been killed daily in the eastern Ukraine since the ceasefire came into place. And the reason that has occurred is because the Kiev regime never had any desire to live up to its terms. Even after approving the ceasefire, even after voting in their parliament to grant Luhansk and Donetsk independence, the Ukraine military decided that they would not only remain in Luhansk and Donetsk, and that they would headquarter their military presence at the airports for those two cities, but they would continue to launch artillery attacks against those cities. That's why this war continues. And you need to keep in mind that the reason that the Kiev regime is doing this is because it is the price they pay to receive American aid. America is providing $25 billion in financial aid. What America wants is to bludgeon Russia, to recommence the Cold War. And so they have to continue to be an irritant. In the 8 weeks since the truce came into force, the UN says 957 people have been killed A new report by the office describes a total breakdown of law and order. Now in Donetsk and Luhansk. It also highlights credible allegations of abuse by government forces. That would be the American-sponsored Kiev regime. Russia has been widely accused of fanning the violence by covertly shipping the rebels military aid, although there has been no proof. And the fact is, since America is providing the money for the Kiev regime to build and deploy its military against the ethnic Russians in Donetsk and Luhansk, if Russia was not providing the ethnic Russians with the means to defend themselves, then it would be irresponsible. Ukrainian Prime Minister Yatsenyuk accused Russia of seeking to deliberately provoke a large-scale war. You know, I hate these guys. Just despise them. Every one of them. If Russia wanted to provoke a large-scale war, it wouldn't provoke a war. There'd be no reason. There is no reason for Russia to provoke a war. If Russia wanted the Luhansk and Donetsk, it would simply take them. No reason to provoke a war. It'd just simply take them. The fact that Russia hasn't invaded means that the Russians would prefer not to go to war. But if the Russians wanted to take them, this is a war that wouldn't even last a week. I mean, this notion that there'd be a large-scale war is delusional on behalf of the Kiev regime. They don't have the means, should Russia choose to take that which they are annihilating to protect it. It wouldn't be a large-scale war. It'd be like Canada trying to go to war against the United States. Now, if you want to think that's a large-scale war, then you're dreaming. Dateline Donetsk, Ukraine, CNN. Ponzinchenko, this begins, has lived in the village of Sepenkova, close to Ukraine's border with Russia, all of his life. 67 years old, it says, so we have a human interest story. Was born a few years before the Red Army captured this land and this strategic hill. Now, by the way, the Red Army captured it from the Nazis because the Ukraine was part of Russia and had been for 300 years. He was a stoic man, or he is a stoic man, a farmer who knows endurance, but the events of the past few months reduced him to tears. On July 28th, amid battles between Ukrainian forces and pro-Russian separatists for the area. Now, keep in mind, this is the area that the Ukraine parliament has said would be independent from the Ukraine. So, for the Russian separatists to be engaged in battle with the Kiev regime, the Kiev regime has to have military personnel in an area that is sovereign. The Ukrainian National Guard shot and murdered Ponesko's 36-year-old son as he tried to move his car to safety. The Kiev regime, the very regime that America had inspired to act as ghouls and take over a popularly elected government with Molotov cocktails and the like, that America is now funding, even after they signed a ceasefire. One of their snipers murdered this man's son. They apologized later, and a soldier helped bury him, but the inadequacy of the gesture goes unsaid. In June, when we came here, this man says, there was a neat village set among rolling farmland. Now it's very poor. And bitter winds blow from the east, and much of the village is in ruins. A decapitated Ukrainian tank sits astride the road. Electricity wires dangle in the wind. And 20 or more properties have been reduced to ruins, including Ponesko's home. He and his wife are the only members of their family left. They have nowhere to go, no electricity, and essentially no food. He says the Donetsk People's Republic, now in control of this area, has promised to restore power, but there's no sign of the extensive work that will be needed. And in a few weeks' time, the temperatures will rarely stray above freezing. The wreckage of this year's battles strewn all around, and many other villages in the eastern Ukraine lie in ruins. The copper of spent bullets gleams in the wintry sun. Sandbags sag over deserted trenches, and husks of tanks and other military vehicles are beginning to rust. And everywhere, homes are reduced to piles of charred bricks. A fireplace stands in an empty place where a home once stood. Dogs are left to fend for themselves, and they wander through piles of garbage. The ceasefire, agreed at the beginning of September, only slowed the tempo of fighting in the eastern Ukraine. And sometimes barely that. Huge volumes of ordnance have been sent from Kiev into Donetsk. And that they are used by the Ukrainian troops at the airport. They target rebels. They target civilians. We made this mess. Completing our thoughts on the Ukraine. The chocolate baron, Petro Pornishko, has ordered the elimination of all state services in the Donetsk and Luhansk area. So they can pay their taxes, but they get nothing back in return. Nothing of the American welfare that has been provided will be afforded people in those areas that have been bombed by the Kiev regime. Be no salaries for teachers or for doctors, no social welfare programs, nothing. Just die in the cold. There is a tendency amongst egotistical people to think that they can do whatever they want, such as the case with the Obaminator. He has decided that he is not president in an administrative role, but instead a legislator. But I'm quite certain that he was not elected to Congress. And yet he has decided that he would impose his own will relative to illegal aliens, granting some 4 million of them legal residency. Now, there's two issues with this. One is that when you have a broken immigration policy as a nation, where we may have as many as 20 million illegal immigrants in the state of California, maybe 10 million in the state of Texas, who knows how many more throughout the United States. And that the United States has actually aided and abetted this problem by providing all sorts of welfare incentives and food stamps incentives and Social Security incentives than it used to be. People would come from Mexico into the United States because they wanted to work. And now they're lured in with the opportunity not to work. And so for the express purpose of continuing to control this these illegal aliens and their now legal counterparts, one of the largest voting blocks in America, for the Democrats, the Obaminator has decided that some 4 to 5 million of them all of a sudden are going to be afforded legal status. But the fact is, he doesn't have the authority to do so. It's an administrative office, not a legislative office. And he's not king. He's not emperor. He's not Caesar. And so what he's doing is not only counterproductive to America as a whole, as the Republicans are saying that you're simply encouraging more people to come here illegally when your solution every decade is to grant those who have come here illegally with legal status. It's not a solution. It exacerbates the problem. But he's doing so in a way where he is completely undermining what was a representative government with checks and balances, where there was a judicial arm, a legislative arm, and an administrative arm of that government. The administrative arm is now acting as if it were legislative. But it's not. Extraordinarily destructive. So here is the man who unfortunately bequeathed the nation with Obamacare, which is devastating to the country's health, particularly its economic health. And now he is dealing another blow, also destructive to the nation's economic health. And the granting legal status to between 4 to 5 million people who are here illegally. It's repulsive. This story says the mouth that won't stop giving is the another video now of Jonathan Gruber. He's the person that designed the president's health care plan, Obamacare. And now he's saying that when he touted and had the president tout the Massachusetts health care system as an example of how a nationalized health care solution could be cost effective, he said we deliberately hid the fact that the support for that system, the entity that paid for that system, was in Massachusetts. It was the federal government. And we didn't disclose that. And then Gruber went on to say, you know, we had a really powerful senator, John Kennedy, at the time. And we got the feds to supplement the cost. Yes, Jonathan Gruber, whom Nancy Pelosi, ever the dishonest one, when she was confronted by his diarrhea mouth here recently, she says, I have no idea who Jonathan Gruber is. Even is. I mean, who are you, you know, to tell me that he's the architect of Obamacare? Then, of course, the mainstream media is comprised of a bunch of dunderheads, and they say, well, Nancy Pelosi says you don't even know who Jonathan Gruber is, so it's just a right-wing conspiracy to make it look like this guy was somehow involved, and then somebody doing a modicum of investigation unearthed the presentations that Nancy Pelosi used to sell Obamacare on the House floor, and the primary individual that she cited as evidence of the plan's financial superiority was Jonathan Gruber. And she introduces him as the foremost expert on the subject, an MIT professor, and then cites them repetitively. Oops. Well, the fact is that Jonathan Gruber's been running around now saying, hey, listen, the whole thing in Massachusetts was a farce. He said that, you know, that the reason that that the Massachusetts plan worked is because they built the feds out of hundreds of millions of Medicaid dollars. In fact, in one video from January 2012 in a forum shows Gruber discussing the Massachusetts overhaul under then-Governor Mitt Romney, explaining how the state was able to take hundreds of millions of dollars in federal Medicaid dollars to make it look like the program was financially solvent. Quote, the dirty little secret in Massachusetts is that the feds paid for our bill, okay? He said, in Massachusetts, we had a very powerful senator. You may have heard of him. He's named Ted Kennedy. Ted Kennedy and very smart people in Massachusetts had basically figured out a way to rip off the feds for about $400 million a year in little old Massachusetts. $400 million a year. Little old Massachusetts. Now multiply that by 50 states and by the fact that Massachusetts is tiny compared to the larger states. And now you have some idea as to how much the federal government has to rip off taxpayers to support a plan that was modeled after Massachusetts. He explained how when Obamacare was written, they had to take a different approach because they had to raise money elsewhere. And he says, yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to tax upper-end plans. That was the way to raise the money elsewhere, only to find out that the plans they were tacking were actually inferior to the plans that they were mandating. And yet another video, Gruber in 2011 mocked a critic during a Vermont House committee hearing examining a publicly financed health care program. At the hearing, the lawmaker read aloud one comment that warned of ballooning costs and of bureaucratic outages. As the hearing participants began to laugh, Gruber said, was this written by my adolescent child by any chance? Mocking them. Gruber is currently being paid to advise the state of Vermont on a new health care system. Watchdog.org also spoke with the man who wrote the comment that Gruber responded to so snarkingly, former state senator and Reagan advisor John McClaudry. No one should trust this man, McClaudry told the Watchdog organization. Based on the rest of the stuff that's come out on the videos, no one should trust this guy. Even though Pelosi claimed that she wasn't familiar with Gruber, other Democrats have made it clear that they know him. On CNN, former White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said of the tapes, it's not good. The fact is that the foremost architect and spokesperson for Obamacare played the country for fools. He said it's very harmful to the president to listen to what Gruber has to say. Well, this editorial on this same subject, the Obamacare architect that dares not speak his name, at least from the lips of Democrats who nowadays are pretending to have little or no knowledge of Jonathan Gruber. The most prominent of the Gruber denials is House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi. She was quoted by the Washington Post reporter Sean Sullivan, whose story headline also featured this denial. I don't even know who he is. He didn't help write our bill, Nancy Pelosi said, and was quoted in the Washington Post. Gee, this editorial reads, if Nancy Pelosi said that it must be true. If you think me a bit too credulous for accepting Pelosi's denial without checking her veracity, well, that is exactly what Sullivan did. absolutely no fact-checking. Of course, in this age of the Internet, fact-checking is relatively easy. No one need pound the pavement in the hot sun or extreme cold hunting down leads as in the olden days. All Sean had to do with the Washington Post as a journalist was to type some words like Nancy Pelosi, Jonathan Gruber into Google and shift through the results. Hey, he could have even sipped on some coffee and enjoyed a little jelly donut while performing this far from arduous task. If he had done so, he would soon have found Pelosi's website post of December 2009, which was chock full of Gruber credentials. In fact, Pelosi's site was so full of Gruber that she cited a whole sentence with him in bold at the very top of the page and an answer to the myth that Obamacare would result in higher premiums. Oh, by the way, Obamacare did result in higher premiums, much higher premiums. Fact, this is what she wrote in bold right at the top of her economic response to the critics. An analysis of the House bill by noted MIT healthcare economist Jonathan Gruber concludes that the bill would not result in lower premiums than under current law for millions. The bill would result, I should say, in lower premiums than under current law for the millions of Americans using the newly established healthcare exchange, including those who are not receiving affordability credits to help them purchase coverage. Yeah, of course, it was all a lie. It was all based on the Massachusetts plan where the federal government was supplying $400 billion to underwrite it a year. Okay, so pay attention, Sean. Here are some more Gruber citations from that same page. The Gruber analysis shows that on the exchange. Gruber also points out that, like Gruber, the CBO found. And finally, this Gruber encore in the form of a link, which, by the way, no longer works. For the Gruber analysis of all of this, please check here. So if you needed some help with web searches, Sean, the man who just took Nancy Pelosi's word, just wrote it down as if it were true, just hand me a cup of Java and a donut, and I'm good to go for you. I say the same thing about Islam. I say the same thing about the stupidity of Iran and its nuclear program for peaceful energy. How long did it take during a commercial break for me to check on Iran's capacity of natural gas? 33 trillion metric meters, largest in the world. Doesn't take much. You have to willfully mislead not to do the investigation. When the president says the Islamic State is not Islamic and no one in the media bothers to fact check, they're just as bad as the Washington Post here. The Washington Post fact check, yes. Republicans are pointing out that Gruber was paid $400,000 for his Obamacare work. Or if you prefer a more acerbic conclusion, taxpayers paid Jonathan Gruber in the mid-six figures to lie to them. And then to brag about his lies to all of his friends later and said, people are so stupid, they're so easy to fool. Glenn Kessler, a fact checker, made the assertion Senator John Brasso of Wyoming had said that Gruber's paid involvement with Obamacare exceeded $400,000, while Nancy Pelosi et al. Kept claiming that the man who was called the architect of the law was unknown to them. Well, Kessler jumps in to correct the facts, and actually discovered that it's true. The cover story in February 2009, when the House signed Gruber to a contract to provide stimulation models for months relative to the health care plan, that he was paid for 4 months at $95,000. They later added an 8-month contract for $297,000 to bring the total known value to $400,000, exactly what the senator from Wyoming had claimed. For his year or so on the job, which would have been little more than the Obamacare legislative effort lasted from June 2009 to March 2010 when they used Gruber, Gruber received roughly what the President of the United States receives for a year. He was paid the same wage to lie to America. That's not too bad for an MIT professor. We'll be back. You know, it's interesting that not only did Gruber get paid the same amount of money to lie to the American people as the president that employed him, $400,000 during the year that Obamacare was being cobbled together to abuse America financially and to control Americans. The most interesting part of the review is that the model that Gruber was paid to provide, which was micro simulation modeling, is the coin of the realm in large part because it is similar to the model that was used by the Congressional Budget Office. That means the administration policymakers could predict with reasonable certainty how the CBO would score their legislation. Given that the legislation in Washington often falls or rises depending upon the CBO score, that made this model a very powerful tool for administration officials. So here's what Gruber had to say about the CBO scoring. He says this bill was written in a tortured way to make sure the CBO did not score the mandate as taxes. Gruber tells the audience with a smile, if CBO scores on the mandate as taxes, the bill would die. Lack of transparency is a huge political advantage, said the MIT economist who helped write Obamacare. And basically, call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever, but basically, that was what really happened. And what was really critical for this thing to pass was a lack of transparency and the stupidity of the American voter. That's according to John Gruber. American taxpayers paid him $400,000 to abuse them in this way. And the result is Obamacare being perpetrated on America and having to endure the onslaught of that horrible legislation. Now, if that doesn't make you mad, if that doesn't make you want to impeach the president, and to throw out this pathetic piece of legislation that was conceived on a pile of lies, then I don't know if you're even reachable. Gruber bragged about gaming the legislative language in order to fool the CBO, that's the Congressional Budget Office. And the mandate tax issue was hardly the only issue which the CBA got smoked and, indeed, snookered. The supposed deficit neutrality of the American CARE Act was a house of cards that rapidly collapsed after passage, as well as the wealth transfers from the young to the old, the healthy to the sick. Yeah, that was the basis of the whole thing. If you're young, you were charged far more for insurance than you should have been charged. If you were old, you were charged far too little. If you were healthy, you were charged far too much. If you were sick, you were charged far too little. It was communism. From each according to their ability, to each according to their need. Socialized medicine. As Gruber explicitly mentions in his video, no wonder the extended Gruber contract, or that the House, the HHS, extended Gruber's contract for another 8 months. They needed his modeling in order to keep cooking, snookering the CBO. And to provide analysis that says, no, this bull, this, pass it, it's revenue neutral. It's deficit neutral. Well, it was obvious that it wasn't revenue neutral. You can't take the single fastest growing, single largest expense to the United States. If you look at the overall budget of the United States, the single biggest expense, the fastest growing expense is healthcare and the government participation in healthcare. And the purpose of Obamacare was to increase the number on Medicaid by 50%. And if you're going to increase the participants in Medicaid by 50%, then you aren't going to have something that is deficit neutral, but instead you're going to exacerbate the single largest cause of American deficits. It was obvious. You didn't have to have any modeling. You didn't have to be a mathematician. You didn't have to be an economist to figure out the obvious. And yet American voters may have been so stupid that they were hoodwinked by this pathological liar and his sidekick, Jonathan Gruber. Gruber didn't limit his deception, however, to the CBO. When speaking to journalists, Gruber made a habit of not disclosing his connection to the Obama effort for the express purpose of posing as an independent expert, when in fact he was paid by the White House.